Willow Creek Complex Fire Incident Commander Greg Ponson says crews are making excellent progress. And if that continues over the next 24 hours, Highway 12 may reopen and evacuees may be allowed to return home, but not before tomorrow at the earliest. Good evening, I'm Sarah Jovetich.
And I'm Courtney Anderson, and that good fire news tops our news tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
A little rain fell on the fire this morning, helping fire crews continue their steady progress along the fire's eastern edge. A red flag warning remains in effect today, so winds are still a concern. Over 650 firefighters are now working the 10,000-acre blaze, burning just 4 miles west of Lolo. News Director Sally Mock was at the fire's incident command center this afternoon, where she spoke with Ponson about progress on the six-day-old fire.
About 7:30 this morning, we got approximately 0.05 up to some parts up near the pass, 1/10 of an inch of rain over the course of about an hour, and then it kind of cleared off. But that was a gift nonetheless. It's going to help keep the fire behavior down to where crews can be more effective, again, controlling that eastern flank where we're trying to go more direct against the fire's edge.
And you've really been hitting that eastern flank hard the last couple of days, both from the air and from the ground, and you now are at about 30% containment, in part because of that effort.
That's right. The fact that we've gotten a bit of a break in the weather. The winds weren't quite as much as predicted yesterday, and of course we've got some favorable conditions this morning. That's allowed our crews to construct fire line and kind of anchored off the Highway 12 corridor there by Fort Fizzle, working north up some favorable ridges. Latest report is that they've made it up to the far northeast corner and are starting to turn the corner up there, which is really good news. That's been our priority, to try and reduce the risk to the homes and private property in the Lolo area, Sleeman Gulch.
Your trigger point has been Sawmill Gulch, and that's where you're really also trying to get that very secure. How's that going, and is it going to the point where you can see evacuees being able to return back to their homes up Sleeman?
Yes, we are. We're doing really well. A lot of good work by the firefighters up there. That's some really steep, rugged ground. Lots of potential for rolling material to come down across the line, and so we're having to be really diligent about working in that country. But so far, progress is excellent. Safety is always the first and foremost concern that we have, and so as we move forward, we're feeling good about, you know, our ability to manage that risk to the firefighters. And with any luck, you know, we're going to be able to get that fire edge controlled within the next 24 hours. And at that point, we're going to be working with the Department of Transportation and the Missoula County Sheriff's Office and Highway Patrol to determine the best time to open that back up. But we're trying to get homeowners back in just as quickly as we can, and the Highway 12 corridor opened as quickly as we can.
But it probably won't be today. Most likely will be tomorrow at the earliest.
At the earliest, yes.
This fire has been burning primarily on private land. I think it's about 8,000 of the 9,500 acres are private land. That's land that's either been developed or logged, correct?
Correct.
So nothing the Forest Service has or has not done in the past few years had anything to do with how this fire grew.
That's correct. I mean, this was really all about the kind of fuels up there and the kind of weather we had, and, you know, that kind of south aspect there on the north side of Highway 12, alignment with the winds. It's a kind of a open pine and grass fuel type that's really prone for rapid fire spread. And, you know, one of the things we have been blessed with is a pretty good old network of roads back in there, and some pretty good ridges to work from. And so really what we've been trying to key in on is using those favorably positioned roads and ridge tops to use as our control lines. Been fairly successful so far.
This fire became the number one priority in the country because of the proximity to private residences and to the town of Lolo. And this is an ongoing issue for firefighting agencies, is that urban wildland interface and all these resources, millions of dollars, this fire is running into the millions now, I'm sure, spent to protect homes that people build in narrow canyons in the woods.
Yes, that's true. And it's really a good opportunity for us to speak to the importance of people doing some fuels work. We call that defensible space, to try and clear some of that flammable material away from their homes so that their property and their homes can survive without putting firefighters in harm's way to protect their property. There's a lot of things they can do ahead of time that makes a huge difference.
We've been broadcasting that message now, Mr. Ponson, for years. And still, you can go up some of these gulches and see a home surrounded by larch or ponderosa pine and a lot of underbrush, and right up against the base of a hill in a steep one-way-in, one-way-out canyon.
There's a lot of human nature involved here, and we'll keep delivering this same message, but there's a couple things at play. One is they can go in and do the fuels treatment, but vegetation grows back, so they have to stay on top of that. Once they do it, they have to maintain it. The other thing is a lot of people live there because of the trees and the vegetation. They like living out there.
But it comes with a responsibility, is what you're saying.
That's exactly where I was going, is that, yes, they, again, you know, fire is a natural part of the environment in this part of the world. And they have to understand that they're living with fire out there. And there are things that they can do that still, would leave their property in a very pleasing way, but would also help make it more fire safe and reduce the kind of exposure that firefighters have to deal with were a fire to start and move toward their property.
You mentioned at one of the briefings, you were reminding people of no home is worth a firefighter's life, and you used the Yarnell Hill fire where the Granite Mountain hotshots tragically were killed.
Yeah, and, you know, it's an interesting insight into the minds of firefighters in general, is when they're called to duty, they are there to protect lives and property. That's historically, of course, what firefighting is all about. And so, you know, it's on the one hand easy for firefighters in this situation to be heroes, but it's also very easy for firefighters to be injured or killed because of the sense of urgency that comes with fighting fire in these interface areas.
You've been fighting fire for over 30 years now. What kind of changes are you seeing in both fire behavior and the general conditions that firefighters face out there? The last 10 seasons have been sporadically just horrendous.
Yeah, and I don't know, you know, a lot of people talk about whether it's climate change or just drought cycles or what it is, but fires have been getting seemingly more intense. Fire seasons seem to be getting longer, but we've got extraordinarily talented fire people at the job still. I've never worked with a better group of people, and we'll continue to do our job the best we can and control those things that we have control over.
Do you feel like the odds are getting longer, though, against you?
Not necessarily. And I think a lot of that has to do with managing expectations. That, again, fire is a natural part of the ecosystem, and our job is to help protect those values at risk. And we'll do the best job we can, but we realize that, you know, we can only do so much. And it's a partnership. Those people who live in the woods also have to take responsibility for that. We'll do our part, and we're asking homeowners out there to do their part in advance. And together we can do the best we can.
Sad that 5 homes were lost in this fire, but great news that no one's been injured or killed on this fire so far, because the first couple of days of this fire were very, very dangerous.
Very dangerous. Extreme fire behavior. Folks that were on the initial attack said it's the worst they've seen in their careers, and some of them have been at it as long or longer than I have. It's very sad that we lost some homes, but it's also important to remember that there was some really good work that saved a lot more homes, so we should look at that also.
Mr. Ponson, thank you so much for your time, and best of luck on the rest of the fire season.
My pleasure. Thank you.
There will be another community meeting on the Lolo Fire tonight at 8 o'clock in the lower gym of the Lolo School. Also, the public fire information kiosk has moved from the Superstop in Lolo across the highway to the truck Wayscale station.
And in other news, more rain is helping to control five wildfires burning in mostly remote areas of Yellowstone National Park. Even so, park officials say they continue to monitor the fires for flare-ups, and areas north of Fishing Bridge remain closed. That includes the Mud Volcano area and trails in the Hayden Valley. Yellowstone officials said today the 12-square-mile Alum fire remains active around its perimeter, but isn't expanding much. The fire is 5 miles north of Lake Village. Thick smoke from the fire caused officials to briefly close the road between Fishing Bridge and Canyon Village on Tuesday, but the fire has since calmed down. Other fires in Yellowstone also have shown little activity after rain fell across the park Wednesday and Thursday. More rain from scattered thunderstorms is expected.
A man who was trying to burn weeds and grass away from the side of a storage building to eliminate a fire hazard accidentally started a fire that destroyed the building and its contents, including vintage automobiles and farm machinery. The fire was reported at about noon yesterday, about 2 miles west of the town of Sun River. Ed Gamar told the Great Falls Tribune that he was burning weeds next to part of the building constructed with brick and concrete and stomped out a fire in dry weeds near a wooden section of the building. However, the weeds continued to smolder and the building caught fire. A damage estimate was not immediately available. Gamar said he did not have insurance but was able to save a pickup and a tractor.
The Federal Appeals Court is ruling against state laws designed to buck federal gun rules. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals today agreed with a lower court's decision that struck down the Montana Firearms Freedom Act. The 2009 Montana law attempted to declare that federal firearms regulations don't apply to guns made and kept in that state. Other pro-gun states subsequently passed similar laws. But the Justice Department successfully argued that the courts have already decided Congress can use its power to regulate interstate commerce to set standards on such items as guns. The Montana Shooting Sports Associated said it expected the appeals court would rule against the law. But the group lauded the court for granting its standing to take its claim to the U.S. Supreme Court.
An inmate serving a life sentence for deliberate homicide has died at the Montana State Prison in Deer Lodge. Prison spokeswoman Linda Moudry says inmate Cleveland Boyer was found in his cell in a high-security housing unit this morning and died at the hospital just before 9 a.m. He was 23, and an autopsy is planned. Boyer was given a life sentence in January for the shooting death of his former best friend, Daniel Valenzuela. Valenzuela was shot numerous times as he stood at a downtown Billings convenience store on March 13, 2011. Boyer fled Billings after the shooting and was arrested in Bozeman the next day. Valenzuela died 5 days after the shooting.
Autumn semester begins next week at the University of Montana, and UM President Royce Ingstrom wanted to infuse the annual State of the University address today with a note of optimism. This upcoming academic year at UM follows a period of upheaval, one in which the U.S. Department of Justice concluded its investigation into allegations of sexual assault involving UM students and the NCAA investigating UM's athletics program. Ingstrom said this upcoming year is going to be one of progress and excitement. He noted the core of UM's mission is academic excellence and innovation. He pointed out data for the entering class of fall 2011 shows that among first-time full-time bachelor degree-seeking freshmen, the freshman to sophomore retention rate is 76%.
The highest in the history of UM and the highest in the Montana University system. That's still not high enough. We have the goal of making that number over 80%, and we're working on that. For the entering class of fall 2006, so this goes back a ways, first-time, full-time, degree-seeking freshmen, the national metric of the six-year graduation rate for UM is 48.3%. That's the highest in the history of the University of Montana. It's still not high enough either. We want that number to get over 50%.
Ingstrom said those gains are the result of hard work of many people and some recent program changes. Student enrollment numbers are critical for UM because its budget is directly tied to students enrolled at the university. Enrollment was down by over 700 students last autumn semester. UM won't have a final enrollment tally for this year until after the 15th day of class.
So we built a budget
last year based on enrollment projections that are within a couple of hundred students of where we were last year, plus or minus a couple hundred. We always prepare projections with a bit of a range associated with it, and so that's what we're looking at. Our total budget for the upcoming year is actually greater than the total budget was for last year. We did receive incremental funding from the legislature. It was a very good year for the legislature. So our total dollars to spend next year will actually be more than it was last year. Relative, though, to the anticipated expenditures for next year, we did have to make some adjustments, some minor adjustments, and so we'll implement those.
His speech included a brief mention of UM athletics, noting its importance to the campus and the entire state.
Last year, Grizzly Athletics won conference championships in women's soccer, men's basketball, and women's basketball. UM was one of just six schools in the country to have both men's and women's basketball team earn an automatic berth to the NCAA tournament. We will add women's softball starting with the 2014-15 academic year, and the interest already from around the state and the country has been tremendous. Kent Haslam informed me that we had nearly 100 people apply for the head coaching position. The NCAA investigation is complete, and we now know our status, and I'm not going to go into any further detail on that here. Athletic department staff, coaches, and student athletes have fully embraced the threefold mission laid out for athletics: academic success, athletic excellence, and community service.
Says UM continues to explore where to locate a new building for Missoula College. The original plan was to place it on the South Campus. Another option is a spot on East Broadway.
The site looks fine in terms of feasibility. There isn't anything about the site that would prevent us from going there with the Missoula College. So at this point, we will schedule two or three public forums to present that idea and get further public input on it, and then make a final decision and proceed forward from there.
Engstrom stresses no final decision has been made on the placement of Missoula College, but public meetings should be held within the next few weeks. Autumn semester classes start Monday.
A Wisconsin-based atheist and agnostic organization is appealing a federal judge's ruling that a 6-foot-tall statue of Jesus can remain on Forest Service land on a northwestern Montana ski hill. The Flathead Beacon reports the Freedom From Religion Foundation appealed U.S. District Judge Dana Christensen's decision that allowed the Flathead National Forest to reissue a 10-year permit for the statue the Knights of Columbus placed on Big Mountain as World War II memorial. The FFRF filed a lawsuit in February 2012, arguing the statue violates the constitutional separation of church and state. Christensen ruled in June that the statue is more often used as a meeting point for skiers than as a solemn place for religious reflection. The FFRF filed its appeal to the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals yesterday.
Two retired nuns who were assaulted during a home invasion robbery have been moved from the hospital to a transitional care facility to undergo rehabilitation for their injuries. Court records say an assaultant beat 90-year-old sister Mary Vincentia Marinick and stomped on the heads of both Marinick and 79-year-old sister Claire Schur during an attack that lasted between 5 and 10 minutes. Sisters of Charity of Leavenworth spokeswoman Teresa Horvat says there's been an outpouring of community support for the women since the August 14th attack, and that they would appreciate, quote, your continued prayer and support, unquote. A 32-year-old Billings man, Christopher Sam Pine, is charged with two counts of felony aggravated burglary and a drug paraphernalia charge. Police are still searching for three more persons of interest in the case.
Officials in southwestern Montana have released the name of an 84-year-old Idaho woman who died in an all-terrain vehicle crash. Beaverhead County Sheriff Jay Hansen tells the Montana Standard that Darlene Beth Bolander of Firth died Tuesday afternoon in a crash in the Centennial Valley southeast of Dillon. Hansen says Bolander and her husband were operating separate ATVs and were traveling with other friends when she lost control of the vehicle. She was thrown off the ATV and it landed on her.
Bison once helped sustain Native Americans on the plains of Montana. Now Indians on the Fort Belknap Reservation say it's time they return the favor. The Great Falls Tribune reported that 34 genetically pure bison from Yellowstone National Park were released on the reservation yesterday. The relocations are part of an attempt to establish new bison herds while curbing the periodic slaughter of the animals when they leave Yellowstone. Mark Azure, head of the tribe's bison program, says bison helped their ancestors survive, and it feels good good to be able to help the bison. Some ranchers challenged the move, fearing the bison would spread disease and compete with cattle for grazing. The bison that were released yesterday tested negative for brucellosis and are being kept in a 1,000-acre pasture with an 8-foot fence.
The presence of West Nile virus has now been confirmed in 8 Montana counties this year, but no humans have been infected so far. Still, Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us there is a lot of mosquito season left to go.
At the state level, there are actually people that go out and set traps for mosquitoes.
That's Laurel Reek. She's an environmental health specialist with the Lewis and Clark City County Health Department. She says the state takes the traps back to a lab periodically.
And test them for West Nile virus. And when they show up positive, then they alert the health department.
So far, health departments have been alerted in Blaine, Cascade, Hill, Lewis and Clark, Phillips, Prairie, Sheridan, and Teton counties. Reek says last year, West Nile was not discovered in Lewis and Clark County until September.
When mosquitoes become positive this early in the summer, that means that there's more opportunity for exposure.
She suggests wearing light-colored, long-sleeve shirts and pants, using insect repellent. Also, staying away from mosquito-prone areas at dawn and at dusk when they're most active.
When it's the most pleasant outside, the mosquitoes are out there too.
Reek says 80% of people who contract West Nile experience no symptoms. The other 20% may experience an illness called West Nile fever. This can include symptoms like headaches, muscle aches, and a low-grade fever. This can last for several weeks in some cases. Also, though, about 1 in 150 people with West Nile virus develop brain infections like encephalitis or meningitis, which can be very dangerous. Reek says people should still be vigilant about removing any sources of standing water near their homes. That is until the first frost, when mosquito populations significantly die out. I'm Dan Boyce reporting in Helena.
And in tonight's weather forecast for west of the Continental Divide, tonight calls for partly cloudy skies with scattered rain showers and a chance of thunderstorms. Lows will be in the mid-40s to lower 50s. Tomorrow expect partly cloudy skies with scattered rain showers and a chance of thunderstorms with highs in the 80s. Sunday will be partly cloudy with scattered rain showers and a chance of thunderstorms. Highs will be around 80s to lower 90s. For central Montana, tonight look for mostly cloudy skies with scattered thunderstorms. Lows will be around 55 to 65 degrees. Tomorrow expect partly cloudy skies with a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon with highs around 80 to 85 degrees. Sunday calls for partly cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms and highs in the upper 80s. And for southwest Montana, tonight will be mostly cloudy in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms and lows around 45 to 55 degrees. Tomorrow expect an increase in clouds with a chance of showers and thunderstorms with highs in the upper 70s. Sunday calls for partly cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs will be around 75 to 85 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Tom Roberts.
Many of us already know that there will be new ways to obtain health insurance starting in 2014. After a long process following the passage of the Affordable Care Act in 2010, which included a Supreme Court decision and a presidential election, we are now approaching the time when health insurance will be within reach for most Americans. Many call this Obamacare, but few yet really understand what it's all about. It's important to remember that many people in 2013 do not have health insurance. Others are spending a large part of their income to purchase insurance which only covers catastrophic events. All of these people are much less likely to use preventative health care or to seek medical care in a timely manner. They are more likely to be sick and to live without treatment of a chronic illness. They are more likely to die. And they are also more likely to have outstanding debt or bankruptcy as a result of no or inadequate health insurance. The new approach that's embodied in Obamacare will make affordable health insurance available to many of these people. Because of this, we can expect to see improved health and improved financial security when the program goes into effect, which is about to happen. Starting October 1, about a month from now, people will be able to go onto the internet and buy health insurance for themselves and their family. This insurance will take effect on January 1st of 2014. The opportunity to sign up will be extended through March of 2014 for this first year, but after that, the time to sign up will be the last 3 months of the preceding year. For example, choices will need to be made in the last 3 months of 2015 for the year 2016. As a direct result of the Affordable Care Act, there will be three competing insurance companies offering health insurance here in Montana. This health insurance will be sold on what is now called the Health Insurance Marketplace, which was previously called the Exchange. This is basically an internet site run by the federal government for Montana, where private individuals, small groups, insurance agents, and some trained counselors can go starting on October 1st to sign up. The costs of buying this insurance have just been released by the Office of the Montana Insurance Commissioner. What we are seeing here in Montana is the same as competitive markets in other areas of the country. The price of this insurance is lower than what a person can buy today. And in general, the benefit package is better than what's now being offered in many plans. A big plus for individuals with prior health issues is that they pay the same premium, depending only on age and smoking status, as someone with no prior health-related issues. People with medical problems are not charged more, and they can't be refused insurance. There are no lifetime limits on total spending. It will be easy to go online and compare the costs of similar plans offered by these three insurance companies, something that has been impossible to do until now for people trying to buy health coverage. People in small groups can make their own choice about how much they are willing to spend for what level of financial coverage. A lower-cost plan provides a similar benefit package, but involves additional spending if a medical problem arises. A higher-priced plan involves less risk, with more of the medical costs covered. Preventive services will be covered 100% in all plans. For many Montanans, there will be substantial cost savings because of federal subsidies. For example, an individual earning between $11,500 and $15,000 in 2014 will pay only 2% of their total income, around $300 a year, in order to purchase a silver level plan which will cover 70% of average healthcare spending. If that person chooses instead to buy a lower cost bronze level plan which covers 60% of average costs, the insurance itself would cost essentially nothing, though out-of-pocket spending, if needed, would be higher. There will also be help with the out-of-pocket spending component for individuals earning up to $29,000 a year and families at higher levels of income. Native Americans will have added benefits. Families of four earning up to $94,000 a year will be eligible for financial subsidies to purchase the insurance, so up to about 80% of Montanans could be affected by this program. These subsidies for purchase and help with out-of-pocket spending are only available if insurance is purchased through this individual marketplace. Many large employers will continue to provide their employees with health insurance next year, but small employers should be reevaluating their options. For many, helping their employees to buy subsidized insurance through the marketplace will be the best approach. Go to healthcare.gov for federal information that is state-specific. Our state insurance commissioner's site is montanahealthanswers.com. The Montana Health Co-op, Blue Cross, and Pacific Source also have information on their websites. All in all, it looks like this complex and comprehensive program is about to do much of what it was originally hoped for, to bring comprehensive, affordable health insurance to most people so that they can and do get the medical care they need. This is a huge step forward for this state and this country. Thanks for listening. This is Dr. Tom Roberts.
Tom Roberts is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Sarah Jovetich.
And I'm Courtney Anderson. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.